Hey guys, welcome to the very first episode of the David Mead podcast. Today I spoke with Justin Olam. Justin is a teammate of mine in the PNG Kumuls and he's also a great friend. I spoke with Justin about his childhood, where he grew up, which was in the Simbu province, and what inspired him to play at a professional level. I hope you guys enjoy this chat because I know I did and I know you'll get a lot out of this. Justin, welcome to the David Mead podcast. Very excited to have you here. Look forward to getting to know you on a personal level a bit more. And we've played Kumuls for a number of years together. I'm excited to have you here. How are you feeling?
Thanks for having me, brother. Yeah, I'm feeling good. I think my first memory of you was like when we played against Fiji Party. Yeah, and then that was the first time I played against you. And I remember I took a photo with you after I got a broken leap.
Yeah.
I got seen with like 10 minutes before full time. So
I remember that camp very well and posted that photo a few times and it's a very popular photo. So.
Yeah, I know. I remember that photo too. Yeah, really well.
I remember in that camp, because boys used to ask me, what was Justin like when you first played with him? I was like, mate, gun player. I was like, where did he come from? You know, and me and Nene were talking. I said, but where's Justin from? Who's he been playing with? Yeah. And I said, but he's a gun. And I was there. They asked me, what's he like outside of training? And I said, mate, he loves to sleep a lot.
Love my sleep. Eh?
Every time in between training sessions, yeah. I'd come back into the room because we were rooming
eh?
And you were asleep. Is that something you enjoy?
Yeah, I really love to rest, I guess. Yeah, so whenever I'm not doing anything, I find time to nap. I try to sleep, rest up, get the body right, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's working for you, so keep it up. All right, so for those of us that don't know, can you tell us some of your background, where you grew up and what it was like?
Yeah, I was born in Simbu. It's up in the highlands, mountains, you know, Papua New Guinea. I'm from like the village, so, you know, most of the houses are you know, bush material houses, you know, our roads are dirt road. We drive around in 4WDs. It takes us like, you know, almost 2 hours to get to the main town when it's raining because we have to, you know, push the car, get there sort of thing. We don't have electricity. Most of the people use like solar power. Or if you're lucky, if you go like a generator, then you get lights for the night. If not, it was just a big bonfire and then, you know, family get around. As a kid growing up, you know, your responsibility is to, after school, we come back and, you know, you got to fetch water and you got to, you know, break the firewood for, you know, your parents, especially our moms, to cook food. And yeah, this is our responsibility, you know, growing up in the village, everyone have like a little responsibility in the family to, you know, stick together sort of thing. So yeah, it's a really simple, life was simple. You know, we don't have water supply. So yeah, that's what I said, like, you got to go, you know, have a shower in the river and then fetch water to come back for cooking and things like that. So life was simple as well, yeah.
We'll come back to your childhood. From that setting, had you been to Australia before that Fiji game?
Ah.
That was your first?
I've never been to Aussie since I did my like debut with Hunters. That was the first time I came to Brisbane and I was like, yo, this is different. You know, everything I've watched in the movies and I'm seeing them now, so I try to calm myself down just to chill, get the vibe sort of thing. But yeah.
When you actually moved here, how did it feel the very first day that you moved over here?
I was really sad. Eh? Like I was, you know, I never thought I was going to feel that way because, you know, I moved out of my home for uni and things like that. But, you know, when I came here, I was like, the only thing that made me sad because I felt like I was alone in a different country and then like the culture is different, you know, because I'm always close to my mom and, you know, like whenever I'm back on holidays for, you know, schools or whatever, like I go back to hang with my mom and I think she was the one that always used to hold me down. And then moving here, I knew that she was not going to go home whenever I come back from training and, you know, things like that. So I think the feeling of being alone was the thing that made me sad and a little bit scared as well. I didn't know I was going to cope. So, yeah.
You're saying the way you lived over there, you had to fetch your water, the living material. I'm guessing that was before you moved to Leh?
Yeah, that was before. Yeah, that was before I moved to LA. So
even that would have been a big shift.
Yeah, I think
in living standards.
Growing up in the village, Port Moresby was a, you know, it was a destination that everyone wanted to go to. Like, not everyone gets to go to Palm. Like, coming to Palm was going to the city. And, like, coming to Australia is different. Like, going to Palm, I didn't, you know, people, like, will go to Moresby and they'll come back to the village and we'll be like, yo, that bro went to, you know, Port Moresby. You know, so the thing is, kind of come back with new clothes and things like that. And we wanted to go there. So, yeah, I think me going to uni was the first time I left home. So, yeah, it was the start of everything, I guess.
And so let's just say you're 6, 7 years old in the village. What's a typical day look like there?
Wake up in the morning, you know, and then my mom will, you know, bake the sweet potato in the fire ashes, give it to us for breakfast. We'll have it with avocado and water. If you're lucky, you get like, you know, coffee or whatever. They love the instant coffee over there as well, so tea. So yeah, sometimes we'll have Milo, so you don't get that every time. So yeah, so you wake up and on a free day, I mostly help around with my mom. So my mom will go to the garden, you know, clean the garden. And it's, I think it's part of our responsibility as well as a kid. So when you get up, we love our, you know, our pigs up there. It is a valuable, you know, sort of animal up there. So we use it for compensation and things like that. So when we get up, we'll take the pigs and then take it to the swamp and then, you know, tie them there so they can, you know, eat the worms. And then, so we came back after I'll come back and, you know, go, you know, look for firewood or things like that. So we'll go into the bush to, you know, break firewood or help our mom with, you know, gardening stuff, you know, clean the bushes or cut bushes or dig drains, things like that. So it's mostly helping the parents with gardening things. And then in the afternoon, we, you know, fetch water, break firewood, whatever. Whenever we get the chance, we still go play, you know, touch footy or volleyball, soccer. These are the games that we play. But you'll have to earn those things to go and the time to go and play. So in order for us to do that, we'll have to, you know, yeah, please our parents and you
put the work in first.
Yeah, put the work in first, the chores and everything are done. So that way you get the chance to go and play.
What's interesting to me is I've seen close up, but I've never been inside, you know, a house that's built with, you know, materials that bush are material, like, you know, bush material. What's that like sleeping in there?
It's really warm, eh? We don't need like blankets to go to sleep. We just, you know, to do the fire, big fire, and that's it. You just go to sleep from
there. Is it one big room?
Yeah, it's one big room, but you can, it depends on the houses. So the cooking house will be just a small one, and then it's one big room where everything is around, where you cook there. But I think the sleeping house, we do break rooms in there and then, you know, build the beds with abuse materials and things like that. So, yeah.
So what's a bed? Like, what's it made out of?
Normally it's just wood and bamboo, or sometimes we got like the long grasses. I don't know what do you call it in English or whatever, but yeah. So we just use that to build it up, and then it's just like, I think 50 centimeter off the ground, whatever. And then you just put it in and then tuck the mattress and so off. Yeah.
And pillows?
Yeah, pillows.
Similar material?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, eh? And how'd you sleep on it?
Yeah, we used like the, you know, proper bed and whatever, but just the, you know, like the, in the house, we just built those ones. It is different because like most of the time, everyone just sleep together in one place. We have like men's house as well. We call it the men's house, you know, back in the village, and it's just only for men. So sometimes this is where all the old people stay. And then like, you know, back in the day, this is where like they do decisions. So, you know, if they want to go to war, whatever, they planned, you know, everything's in those places. And yeah, the women are not allowed to go in there. So yeah, sometimes I go and sleep with my grandfather in the, you know, in the men's house. This is where, you know, you listen to tales and stories and, you know, things like that. So it's good. Yeah, I love going to the men's house as well.
Was there some interesting stories that your grandfather used to tell you?
Yeah, it's pretty much like history, and, you know, they tell us about who we are, you know, what kind of person, you know, or what kind of people we are. And then like some of the old battles they fight, you know, they talk about those things. So yeah, and then what they do when they're young and things like that. It's to be very interesting because back in the day, it's very cultural and, you know, everything was custom and things like that. And now it's just so different because of the, you know, Western influence and the new time. So yeah, we sort of feel like we're missing out on what has happened, you know, back in the day with the with them. So yeah, it's good to listen to them. They used to tell us how they, you know, go around, you know, looking for girls and things like that, you know, hunting or fighting. So yeah, normally they'll form like a group and then they'll go from a village to another village, and then all the young boys that are ready to, you know, get married, and they'll go and sing with the girls from, you know, another village. They go sing, and then like, you know, when if they meet someone that they really like, and then I think they're gonna come back and, you know, get them and come for married or whatever. Yeah, this is how they meet back in the day, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah, it's one of the interesting stories that I heard.
How far was that village away?
It takes them like I think a week or two. So they just walk. They just don't go to one village. So they go from one village to another. So if they meet someone they really like, they'll be like, they'll tell the girl, you know, I'll come back and, you know, get you sort of thing. So they. Back in the day, I can imagine there's no phones or whatever. So the girls probably be hoping that they come back and pick them up. Yeah, so.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think a story like that.
Yeah, well, I love it. Yeah.
In our village, the bride price is huge. Yeah. Do they do that?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Bride price is, it is something that's common all across Papua New Guinea, I guess. Yeah.
For those that don't understand bride price, can you give like a short answer or your understanding of what bride price is? Because I've got an understanding, but I think you might explain it better than I will.
Oh, yeah. So the bride price is like, I think it's sort of payback to the girl's village, you know, because the girl is going to move to her husband's place. So he's just telling them, it's like a thank you, you know, thanks for looking after the girl and then, you know, brought her up, but now she's going to be part of our family now. So it's like on the bride price, they exchange the girl and then they give the pigs and whatever, telling them that now she's part of our family now. She's one of us now. So she's no longer, you know, she's still part of a family, but now she belongs to this tribe now. So whatever happens, like if there's fights or whatever, she's part of us now. So that's like the exchange, I think
for that reason. She's part of us now.
Yeah, it's part of us now. We got her now, so she's with us. You know, but in the future, if the husband dies or whatever, she's not allowed to go back because she's one of us now, so she can stay there. So when she moves to the husband's village on the bride price day, you know, they tell her where his husband's lands are and whatever, so she can, you know, farm there, look after the land, raise the, you know, kids and things like that. So it comes with the responsibility now. She's part of the woman in the village as well. So the responsibility is like if the husband is a chief, then she needs to, you know, look after, you know, a lot of pigs for compensation and things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting part of PNG culture. I know it happens a lot of across a lot of other cultures, but, yeah, I find it very interesting. When you moved to Lae, how old were you when you moved to Lae? Schooling?
I think that was in 2012.
Is that straight out of the village?
Yeah, straight out of the village. I think I was 18, I think. Yeah, 18, yeah.
Yeah, because you've got a uni degree?
Yeah, that's where I went and did my uni there, yeah.
How did you find studying high school? Were you top of the class? Were you?
I wasn't the top of the class. I just love to challenge myself, I guess. I love the, you know, the idea of, you know, studying and staying up late. You know, I like that one because I feel like when I'm working, I feel like I'm accomplishing things, and I got to like that idea. So yeah, I decided to. I originally wanted to, you know, be a doctor. And yeah, I always wanted to be a, you know, cardiologist. That was my dream. I think my mom wanted me to go to Unitech to take this course. So yeah, I did that and I went to Unitech. But yeah, I wasn't the smartest one. But I love to challenge myself to study. So
Was that always in your nature? Do you feel, or is it something you had to work hard to develop the hunger to, or to challenge yourself?
I think I got it off my mom. She's a very challenging, you know, person. She's always hard on us at home and things like that. So I think our home is, you know, challenging. You will never, you got to do your job. Like if you're a kid in the house, you know, you need to, you know, do your responsibility. If you're on for chores or breaking food or, you know, fetching water, you got to do it. My mom will never tolerate that. And I think I got that off her. Like, you need to get your job done, sort of thing. So it's the same thing that applies to school. When I went to school, like, she wants us to be, you know, top of the class. If you're not the top of the class, then she is always going to be, you know, talking to you about it, getting to you, sort of thing. So, yeah. And even like in the village, when we go gardening and things like that, like my mom will always be, you know, you got to finish this part of the work before we go home. So, yeah. I think I got that off air.
I feel like I can relate to that story a bit because I remember as a young kid, my grandparents used to walk to the farm, the garden. Yeah. It was a couple of kilometers from our village, the piece of land where they had the garden. And, you know, most of the time we try and catch lifts with the ute that's driving past and sit on the back and take us to the
back of the ute. You don't do that around here.
Yeah. I used to miss a lot of school because of that because I enjoyed going to the garden with them. Yeah, you know, planting bananas, yams, taros. I wouldn't say they were hard on me to do all the stuff, but just the example they set.
Yeah,
seeing them work hard was, I think, a lesson I took out of that. And I'm not sure if, you know, kids in PNG see much of that anymore. I know there is.
I don't think they do that anymore because I think the new generation, they don't have the respect for their parents anymore. That's the way I see it. It's like they just don't care. Like the custom and the culture and the respect for the elders and, you know, the parents is dying out. It's sad to see that because this is part of our identity. Then this was who we are. And it goes back to, you know, even in like leadership and things like that. It, you know, people with money, they're taking over the leadership, not the wisest one or like the one that's supposed to be leaders, like the true leaders, you know. It's just, if you have things, then you're the leader now. And it's like, it's really sad sort of thing. So I think they don't have the customary respect and then, you know, the fear for older people, elder people, even like the parents and things like this. I still believe there's some around, but I don't think everyone is doing that. And you can easily see like, you know, young kids talking back to their parents. And I will never do that back in the day. Like my parents were literally best me, and that's the fear there.
Yeah.
And we used to be like, there's this fear that if you talk back to your parents or the elder people, like, you're not going to be a good person in life because you're not going to be able to learn things. And the fear of respecting elder and the old people was there. And like, we used to believe that it's part of our culture that they passed on the blessings. So if you want to, you know, have a good life and be a good person, then you got to treat the elders with respect and, you know, with care so they can, if they feel good or if they see you, you know, if they give their heart to you, then that means, you know, you're going to have a good life. If not, if they say, you're like this and you're not going to have a good life, it happens, you know, because this is why we believe in that. And I think those things are dying out and people are becoming reckless, especially this new generation. I think I've seen that from some of my little brothers and sisters back at home and my cousins and that. So it's so sad, I guess. Yeah.
Why do you think that's happening? Is it the TV's around, they're seeing different type of lifestyles? That's what they want?
I think a big part of it is because the culture's dying out, you know? Yeah, the modernization and the Western, you know, cultures coming in and people are moving to urban areas for, you know, jobs and things like this. And it's good they're doing that, but at least, you know, I think I still believe we got to keep our culture. I don't think like some of the young kids now, they know how to speak even the local languages because the pidgin is taking over and those little things like that. I think it's just, it's sad because it's taking us away from who we really are.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we're really respectful people. We, you know, respecting our elders and our parents and things like that. So when kids don't do that, like you can't learn valuable lessons in life because, you know, the parents and the elders are supposed to be the one to teach you that, because this is how things work. You know, this is how life used to be back in the day, and they have the knowledge and experience to tell those young kids, but they can't tell them because now the young kids are talking back and they just go about their own way, and they started to drink and, you know, smoke, I think, pretty early sort of thing. So those things are the contributing factors, I guess.
The reason for this podcast, the reason why I started it was, you know, to empower youth, to deliver some good messages from athletes, current and former, and other people who have done well in their fields. Yeah. Just to get some words of support, some advice for the kids in their teenage years, or, you know, they might be doing it tough. They get some self-doubt and, you know, they have lack of belief or things like that. Did you have any doubts about finishing the degree or anything like that? Or did you know you were going to finish it?
I knew I was going to finish, but I think the big doubt is, you know, going out there and, you know, getting a job, actually, because PNZ is it's really hard to get a job back at home, even if you have a uni degree. You know, like, there's heaps of people with degrees and they're still on the street. I think you gotta either be the top of the class or you gotta know someone to get a job these days. So that's the doubt that I have, you know. I used to, you know, when I was at uni.
But you knew you were gonna
finish. Yeah, I knew it. I was gonna finish. I never, you know, doubt my ability to, you know, study hard, because
for anyone who's in school and they're like, I don't know if I can finish this, or I don't know if I have that belief to finish this. You know, have you got any words of advice for kids trying to finish high school or trying to get a uni degree?
It is hard for, like, young kids, because sometimes they don't know what they want to do in life. But I think, you know, education is the only way out of the village. Like, for me, if I wasn't going to school, I wouldn't be here, because education got me to LAY, and that's when I started to play rugby. So this is... it's either you have a village life and you stay in the village, or education will take you out. And everyone has to go through this, and it is definitely tough. But, you know, I think if you put in the work, you can, you know, not everyone is smart on the same level, or everyone is, you know, really bright or whatever. But it is a guarantee that if you study art, you will give yourself the best chance to, you know, pass or be whoever you want to be in life. And, you know, that's the fun thing about life. You know, you want to challenge yourself and, you know, see what you're made of and what you're capable of, and follow your dreams. I think everyone, all the kids out there, they back at home, they want to be someone, you know, like, you know, you want to be an engineer, or you want to be a doctor or whatever, but you can't just jump straight to that. There's steps to that. And I think, you know, staying motivated, as in, you know, study hard. It is hard for kids to study back at home. Like I said, you know, the influence of peer pressure and everything that are going on. But if they can, you know, just focus on your study first and listen, I think listening to the parents is one big thing that kids back at home need to understand, that it is really important.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the good point you brought up was the peer pressure. I think, you know, we were speaking in the car about, you know, kids in school, in their school uniforms, videos of them getting, you know, drunk, doing drugs and stuff like that. Obviously a result of peer pressure.
Yeah, it's definitely, yeah.
How do you, it is hard to, you know, just cut your bad friends off and go and look for good friends. It's a very hard thing to do. It's not easy. Have you got any tips or advice for kids who, you know, they want to cut those friends out, or, you know, help their friends so they can find the right direction?
Yeah, I you know, I grew up having friends like that, you know, drinking heaps, whatever. But I never, you know, I didn't cut my friends off. I think I pick and choose what I want to do. You know, when it's time for me to study, I go and study. Like, and when I want to drink, I go and drink with them. But I know my, you know, my boundaries. It comes back to, you know, individuals, like kids, they need to see. And then I think the parents need to drive that. You know, tell them, if you keep doing those things, this is where you're gonna end up, and these are the consequences of you being like that. So the parents need to drive this at home, and then, you know, the kids need to give the decision to the kids to make it for themselves, as in, like, you know, show them the consequences of their actions, and, you know, show them the path to, you know, to do those things. So I think cutting out the friends is not part of my thing. But I pick and choose, you know, when I want to drink or when I want to hang out with my friends, sort of thing. So it's still good to, you know, have friends and, you know, make mistakes and things like that. But I think, yeah, pick and choose your time.
After you had finished uni and then you played for the Hunters, what was your first year with the Hunters?
It was 2016, yeah. So straight after uni, when I did my final year, I think that's when I played, I think, Prime Minister's 13. And then, yeah, I got picked for the, I think, the 40-man squad, whatever, to train and trial for Hunters. So, yeah, it's 2016, I made the final squad and started with them.
You were with Lay Snacks Tigers before that?
Yeah, I was with Snacks Tigers before that, Lay.
How'd you find was there much difference in intensity of training, or did you find any differences there?
The intensity was in the game, I guess. Obviously, Q-Cup's a little bit, faster and, you know, physical. Not so much physical than, you know, the local.
Yeah, I've seen some digital cup games. physical. That's something that I like.
It's more structural, I guess. You know, you got heaps of talented players playing in the cup because, you know, if you know some of the clubs, if you're not playing in NRL, you know, the NRL players come down and play Q-Cup. So I think that's the thing. It's faster and then it's more, you know, competitive compared to this cup.
In that same year, you got picked for the Kumuls?
Yeah.
What was it like when you got the phone call? Did you get a phone call?
No, I think Mike's Marum was our coach, so he told me himself. And
what was that moment like? Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do remember it. I was, it was a dream come true for me. I always wanted to play for Kumuls and to play for Kumul, like, you know, in the Villains, it is a massive thing. You know, you grow up, we used to look up to, you know, Kumul's players. My uncle used to play for, you know, Kumul's as well. And yeah, when I got the, you know, when Mike's came and told me, I was, you know, pretty proud. I called my, you know, my parents straight away and I told them, yo, I'm going to play for Kumul. So yeah, I went to training. I remember like the whole, he told me in the morning and then in the afternoon, they're going to do the press conference. And then yeah, we went to training for Hunters and I was just running around, like filled with energy. I knew that I was going to play Kumul. So yeah. I was like really happy. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And what did your parents say when you told them?
Yeah. My parents was really proud of me. You know, my mom was crying as always, PNG moms. Every little thing they cry. So yeah.
Your first day in camp for the Kumuls that week? We were in Sydney. How'd you find that?
Obviously, you know, we got like you guys, you, I think, and Nene and them, like the NRL players, you guys came and joined us in the camp. And yeah, it was, you know, I really look forward to see that and see how you guys are going to behave, you know, around training, because I wanted to, you know, pick some of the things that you guys are going to do. Like, you know, obviously you guys are leaders. So I want to see like the standard that you guys are going to set. So I was like pretty keen to see what you guys are going to do. So I was low key sitting at the back observing. Yeah.
Watching everything.
Yeah. Watching everything.
You see, that's a great, I think that's a great trait to have, just going in to see how other players prepare and train. I think that's a great trait to have. And yeah, that's an advice I'd give to young kids trying to, you know, play whatever sport they can, you know, looking at people, how they behave and how they train, how they eat, all that stuff's pretty important. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. I remember I was rooming with you at that time when we were at Sydney and I was just observing you, like the way you do things and like, because I was like pretty strict on, you know, everything I do. I'm like more, you know, routine orientated. And I looked at you and you're like, you're chilling, you know, you're just doing your thing. You're just living your life sort of thing. And I'm like, oh, I might as well just, you know, cut some of the things out. I don't need to be really strict on myself. He's still doing that and he's playing good. So that's one of some of the things that I picked up from you. So yeah.
I'm glad they're good things, I hope.
Yeah, it is. It is, you know, because I feel like if you're like very routine orientated like me, you know, and then if you don't do one thing right, it just gets into your head and you're like, oh, I didn't do that. Like, did what I was going to do sort of thing. So yeah, I picked that thing from you and I'm like, oh, you know, he still kills it and he plays really well. But then he's living his life, you know, he's just chilling. It's not all about rugby league, you know, it's just you can still live a good day as a normal person, sort of thing. So, and the other thing, I think when I went into the gym and I saw you guys lifting weights, and I'm like, you guys didn't go like heavy, you know, lift heavy weights. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So this is one of the things that I picked up as well. It's not all about, you know, brutal strength. It's about, you know, power, or, you know, being smart and look after your body. So yeah, I think these are two things that I picked up that camp by watching you and then I train.
Now, with those camps and stuff like that, normally, you know, our trainers from the club give us a program or, you know, a guideline of what to follow. So I certainly didn't make it up myself. I've had a lot of help from trainers. So
right.
I was lifting lightweight. Yeah. It's because it was advice from the trainer. It wasn't by choice.
No, like what I meant was like you guys didn't, you know, go heavy, like go hard sort of thing.
Coming back to the Kummels, I know it's always a proud moment putting that jersey on every time you put it on. Is there one that stands out for you?
Definitely my debut. And I think after that was the England game that we beat them last, I think, 2 years ago. Yeah, these two. Because I always wanted to beat like a Taiwan nation. And when we beat England, that was something that I really are close to me, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great moment.
Yeah, it was a great moment. Everyone is so fired up from the start. And I was like, we were horny. Yeah. Hopefully we can get that and your energy, same energy to walk up, and hopefully we can, you know, go a long way for not ourselves, but our, you know, our people and our country. Yeah.
When was it that you started talking to Melbourne Storm, and, you know, how did that conversation come about?
I think it was when I was playing Hunters round five, I think after round five, they must have seen me play, and then they wanted they contacted Bob Cutmore. I think he was the CEO for Hunters at that time. So they talked to him about me, and they said they offered, like, I think a training trial, like a 6 weeks only. So this was the original agreement until I think we played the Kummels, and then after that they offered me a 2-year contract. So yeah, well, I didn't tell anyone. Even when I got the news about like the training trial and things like that, I didn't even tell anyone. I asked the coach as well, not to tell anyone, just to keep it between me and him until I actually signed something. So yeah,
until you wanted to make sure it was guaranteed before.
Yeah, I didn't want you know, things to go anywhere, because PNT Media will take it to another level, carry on sort of things. So I didn't want that.
PNG Media, I love PNG Media.
Yeah, they take something and they just,
run with it.
Run with it.
So from when you got the phone call from Melbourne, how long was it in between from getting the phone call to actually arriving in Melbourne?
Like I said, it was round five of Q Cup. So I think I got the whole season. And yeah, so when I got the... when I got the message, like Bob Cutmore took me in and told me about it, and he's congratulating me. But I wasn't satisfied because I knew, like, I didn't sign anything. It was just could be anything sort of thing. So, yeah, my focus was to, you know, play hard and, you know, still keep playing best every week in, week out, until I think the Kummels test match helped. I was fortunate enough to be part of the team with you guys, and, yeah, we won. And then after that, yeah, I think they sent me the contract up to sign for 2 years. So this I signed that. And then at the end of the year, I went to Melbourne, I think October 15th. Yeah. November 15th. Yeah. That's when I was 2016. That's when I went there and then started a new life in Melbourne, I guess.
And with your first training session in camp, how did you feel? Before you got there, were you nervous, excited?
I was definitely nervous because I knew that the training was going to be hard, and I'm not a really good trainer, like, as in fitness-wise. Now I'm definitely not up there with the rest of the group. So that was something that I used to struggle. I still struggle now, but I still put in the work. Like, I'm, you know, during the weekend that I try to do like an extra set of fitness, whatever, to keep my fitness up. So,
and so when you arrived, do you remember the first player you spoke to, the first guy you shook hands with?
I think I went into the gym and then everyone was there, and I met the gym instructor, like I was strength trainer, and the man, I met him, and then like all the boys were there, like everyone was so nice. They just walked up to me and they, you know, said welcome. They shook my hands, whatever. Cameron, I think Cameron was there, Billy as well. And then later during the day, Akupa came as well, and I met him as well. So, yeah, I felt welcome straight away because, you know, all the boys took me in. They gave me a locker room and whatever. So, yeah, it was good.
Well, what did you do for your first session? Was it a fitness test? Was it a light session?
Yeah, it was just a light one. I think I did a gym. Gym was the first one. So I did a strength training and, yeah, we went from there.
What's conditioning like down at Melbourne? Because, you know, you hear stories throughout all the years, like how hard the training is.
Yeah, we definitely train hard in Melbourne. And, yeah, like I said, I'm never like a fitness person, but when I went there, I was definitely, you know, I have to do those things because it is the standard around the club. So, like, you got to do those things. So, yeah, the fitness is always hard. You know, on a big day, we run like how many kids, I don't know, but like as heaps, whenever we finish and when I go home, I'm just ready for bed. Like sometimes I don't eat dinner, I just go straight to sleep. I'm that tired. So yeah.
It's certainly a great club and obviously you worked pretty hard, but to land Melbourne, that's a good gig to get.
Yeah.
Walking, shaking hands with Cameron Smith.
Yeah, definitely. Cronk,
Billy Slater. That must have been a great moment for you.
Yeah, because I think that those blokes are so humble, like they didn't, you know, meeting them didn't feel like, you know, you're meeting those, you know, kind of people with that, you know, standard high, you know, like big people sort of thing. But it's just, you know, they're so humble. They came to me and, you know, they shook my hands and I remember like they just sit down and, you know, have a chat, whatever. And this is the kind of like leadership that they brought. And I think this is the culture, I think, reflects about Melbourne. It's like, you know, everyone is the same and, you know, the respect around players and things like that. So, no one is, you know, above everyone. Everyone's like there for each other. They're playing for each other sort of thing. So I think we've got like a tight group down there, which is good, you know, good to be part of a group like that.
Has there been like a hard moment in your career so far?
I think the hard one was to, you know, crack it to NRL. I think, yeah, it was a little bit mental as well. You know, I really wanted to play NRL and, you know, the pressure of playing NRL. And I think, you know, my parents or family or, you know, people, you get messages from people, random people asking, oh, when are you going to play? When are you going to play? And I'm like, I always have the answer. But yeah, you know, I used to just tell them, look, I don't know. You know, the team, it's up to the coaches if they want to pick me or not. So I think, you know, playing CAF for a little bit, it was really mental as well. But I think I changed my mindset. Instead of worrying about that, I was worrying about, you know, training, you know, what I'm going to do to train well or play better sort of thing. So I think when I changed my mindset, I totally forgot about playing in a NRL. I was just enjoying playing CAF. And then, yeah, I got the second chance again to, you know, play in a NRL. And then, yeah, I made my mark, I guess.
So, yeah, definitely. You certainly made a mark in the NRL. And the next question was, what's your proudest moment so far in NRL?
Ooh, I reckon the grand final's up there, eh? The grand final's up there.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's everyone's dream.
Yeah. I still can't believe I got a ring. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you describe the moment when the full-time whistle went and you knew you'd won the grand final?
I was so happy, man. I just couldn't believe it. I remember I did like a massive scream and just let it all out. Yeah. Like it was like a dream. It's like you're in the moment, but you're not at the same time. Like I'm looking at myself in that moment sort of thing. So I'm like, wow, I just won like a premiership. So I just, yeah, it took me a little while to like got over it. But yeah, I still sometimes, you know, sometimes when I feel down or whatever, like I see those moments and be like, yo, I'm a, you know, premiership player.
Yeah.
And I got to sometimes give it back to myself sort of thing. So yeah, I think this is the proudest. My debut is up there as well. My debut's up there, but my debut came with like a lot of feelings sort of thing. So it was just, you know, nerves. All those things, but grand final was just pure joy and, you know, the feeling is still fresh.
And there's a lot of photos of you. I don't know if they were grand final photos or probably leading up to the grand final. And then I saw a few articles saying you're called Fear. Is that a name you come up with?
The boys, they call me a lot of things. I think one of them.
I think I can understand why, but can you give us a more clear explanation?
I don't know why. Jesse Bromitz loves to call me that. I don't know why they call me Fierce. I don't know why they call me Fierce, but yeah. They call me Fierce and yeah. So... I don't know.
Putting fear into other people, that's what it is. You can say it.
I don't know why they call me that, but yeah, I just love it. And yeah, the voice. I think this part of the voice as well, like this shows how outside we are, I guess. You know, they call people funny names and things like that, and I'm just okay with it.
And that one stuck.
Yeah, and that one I think stuck for a little bit. So yeah. Hopefully it gets away soon.
I hope it stays with you. What moment are you proud of in your personal life?
In my personal life, I think it's not a moment, but it's, I think, moving away from my family and, you know, being able to live by myself, because I didn't know I was going to be able to do that, because like I said, like my mom was my anchor, and like I will always, you know, be around her and get my advice or things like that. And she was like my, you know, like I said, my anchor. But to actually move away from her and then, you know, living my life, making decisions and, you know, still living in another country but doing okay, I think this is one thing I'm proud of myself, is, you know, I think it shows that I'm, you know, growing up, I guess.
So a few rapid fire questions just to lighten things up a bit. Well, who's your favorite musician or artist? Or do you have any favorite type of music?
I like Akon. I think he is he's a really talented player. I mean, singer. But I like the way, like the work he does off music as well. Like, you know, he goes back to Africa and gives back to the people. I think I have seen it. I think he's building a city back in I think Africa, and then yeah, it's like provide electricity for like thousands of people. So
yeah,
it's part of the reason why I like him, and I think he's a really talented musician as well. So,
and what's your favorite meal?
Favorite meal? I love my food. I think I don't have a favorite food.
What's
I can't
your favorite
pick.
PNG dish?
Coconut. Anything coconut with veggies, maybe, you know, seafood or coconut chicken with veggies and rice. Yeah, simple.
And driving in the car from Sunny Coast to Brisbane, you ordered a soy latte. So I know you've got a bit of Melbourne flavor in you.
I think that's...
What's your favorite meal from Melbourne?
I think that's the thing I got from comedy. I never used to drink coffee back at PNZ, but then I hang around with the boys heaps and... No, I'm loving my coffee, so yeah.
Favorite rugby league player growing up?
Ooh, love it. I used to look after Darren Lockyer. He used to be my favorite Bronco, and I used to grow up as a Bronco fan. But then like Billy Slater came in and he just stole me, I guess. Yeah. So now I'm caught between Lockyer and Slater.
So what are those two? Yeah. Two very good players. Have you got a favorite book?
I'm not a book person though. I don't really read books. I think my life, I've read one book, I think. I think it's from a rapper, Lacrae. I think it's a life story. I was just reading that one, yeah. I'm not really a reading person unless it's something educational, I'm reading it. But if not, yeah. I don't read books for fun, yeah.
Where's Wally or anything?
Nah.
No? You know who Where's Wally is?
Nah.
Oh, okay. I won't speak about that. It's just a picture book.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you got to find this character. But anyway, we'll skip past that if you don't understand. If you were an animal, what would you be?
I would definitely be a wolf.
A what?
A wolf.
A wolf?
Yeah, 100% I'm a wolf.
Why a wolf?
Because I like their characteristics. I think they put their family first. They're loyal. They're very unselfish creatures, and they look out for each other. So I think, yeah. They don't you know, they don't fight when they don't need to. You know, they only go to hunt because they need to kill for their family, and they fight because they're defending their family. So
that is an awesome answer.
Yeah.
I love that. as we get closer to wrapping it up, I just want to talk a little bit about post-rugby league, if you've given it any thought.
Yeah.
Have you got, I know you said you wanted to be a cardiologist. Is that still something you have in mind post-rugby league?
I think that dream is gone for me, unfortunately. I can still try to go, you know, do it, but it's going to take a little bit of, you know.
Okay with it?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. Because when I did the decision to apply to Unitec, I made peace with myself on that one. So, yeah, I think that dream's gone.
What is there anything else that you think of post-rugby league, or you're enjoying rugby league right now?
I am enjoying rugby league right now, but I would definitely want to go home and do some things around with, like, kids, you know, young players coming up, because I personally believe that we need to, you know, have like a junior competition in Papua New Guinea, you know, teaching, and not only teaching, you know, the young generation about, you know, rugby league, or not just rugby league, but like not only pursuing their dreams or who they want to be, but like, you know, teaching them to be like good people and better person, because your skills and whatever doesn't count when you're, you know, when you don't have a good attitude, or when you don't have respect for other people, sort of thing. So I feel like this is one thing that I wanted to go back and give it back to, give it back to the young kids back at home. Hopefully I can, you know, if I can start a foundation or anything soon, so I can help those, you know, kids, and, you know, hopefully get some recruitments to come and, you know, train them myself, do those things. So if I have a family, I'll definitely want to, you know, raise them here in Australia, give them a better chance, which I never had. So I think I would do that. But apart from that, you know, I would definitely want to go back and work with, you know, kids, hopefully do some coaching sort of thing. So, yeah, I think my degree is going to be on hold for a little bit.
But it's a great plan for, you know, life after rugby league. I think PNG certainly does need that junior development program, I believe, as well. And hopefully it's something that comes into play, because there's so much talent in PNG that goes unnoticed.
Yeah, 100%. I've witnessed a lot of those things, because, you know, growing up in the village, I'm telling you, there's a lot of kids there that are better than me. Like I sometimes never make my local team back at home, because, you know, there are a lot of good, you know, players out there in the village who are playing. But it's just, I think the opportunity, you know, the right pathway, the, you know, guidance, those things are missing. You know, like I used to sometimes sit down and look at myself, and I'm like, if I didn't go to uni, like, I would never be here at all. I went there, and that's where I got the opportunity to come. And like, some of my friends, they're still in the village. They didn't get the chance to come out, and like, their talents and whatever just, you know, wasted back there. So, yeah.
Definitely. If you could say one thing to a 13-year-old you, I know that life has, you know, worked out pretty well for you, but knowing what you know now, if there's some advice you'd give to a 13-year-old you, what would you say to him?
If I have to give one advice to my young self, is, you know, follow your dream. And I think, like, I was lucky enough to be, you know, hardworking, because I got that, like I said, off my parents, like my mom, straight away. So if I have to give advice to my young self, is, you know, listen to your parents. I think they know what's best for you, because at a young age, you don't know what you want. So the things that they are like your guidance. And, you know, growing up, I used to be, you know, like, you know, very religious as well. Sort of thing. So I think, yeah, listen to your parents, you know, and, you know, put God first. I think that's the most important thing, that, you know, now this generation, they tend to forget, is, you know, there's always a guidance, you know, with the man upstairs, and he's always looking after us, he's looking out for you, sort of thing. So put God first, and, you know, listen to your parents, because they know what's best for you. They only care about you, you know. They're hard on you because they want you to have a good life. That's all. That will, you know, them know hard on you because they want you to be a bad person. So, yeah.
That's a great way to wrap up the episode today. Justin, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your insights. I appreciate the stories that you've given. I know a lot of people, you know, not just in PNG, but around Australia and in the Pacific will certainly benefit from that. So thank you for being on the show, and I wish you all the best for the rest of the year.
Thanks, my brother. Thanks for having me.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind-the-scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.